Chapter 25. The slaughter drags on. Meanwhile, on the battlefront of Western Europe, the gigantic hecatombs of 1915 had not sufficed. The Europeans were going to remedy that by massacring each other more stupidly than ever. At Verdun in 1916, besides 1 million wounded, 336,000 Germans were killed, as well as 362,000 Frenchmen. Each bled the other white. On February 21, 1916, on the first day alone, the artillery fired more than 1 million shells, burying thousands of soldiers alive. Along the front, there was no longer a spadeful of earth that could still be plowed. One no longer bothered to take the weapons from men who had been buried upright. Photos were taken, one moved on somewhere else. Somewhere else was Artois, since each commander wished to have an offensive to his credit. Falkenhayn had had his offensive at Verdun. Joffre, almost at the same time, began to prepare his own offensive on the Somme. He knew that only by burying the enemy under hundreds of thousands of shells would he be able to cross whatever remained, if anything did remain. The home front made unprecedented sacrifices. Vietnamese and Chinese machinists worked until they dropped. On the 1st of July 1916 the bugles sounded the coming victory. The artillery barrage surpassed anything ever seen before, a gun fired every 18 meters. It was like a forest of steel and resulted in rows on rows of crosses in the cemeteries. Bled white at Verdun, the French were forced to reduce their profligacy in human lives. At first Joffre counted on launching an attack with 42 divisions. Then in March it became necessary to reduce the number to 34, in May, to 32. Even at that, there were a great many colonials among them. On the other hand, the British reinforced their contingents, 26 divisions. Thousands of cannon and hundreds of thousands of exhausted men stretched out across a breadth of 30 kilometers. For 6 days the artillery inflicted an annihilating fire on the Germans. Then French and English troops were sent to the slaughter. In those days soldiers were still loaded like mules. 65 pounds on their backs to engage in hand-to-hand fighting. At the third German line of defense, they collapsed from exhaustion. The Franco-British, wrote Marc Ferro, La Grande Guerre, page 150, did not get past the insignificant villages of Thiepval, Mametz, Comelles, and Chaume. They were fighting 2 against 1, but the Germans had carefully constructed underground blockhouses that made their defense in depth invulnerable. The Allied attempts of July 20, of September 3, and of September 20, 1916, failed like all the rest. And the price of these useless battles? The figures were dreadful. By the second day the British command had already lost 40,000 Englishmen. One might think that would be enough. But no. Attack after attack. Each time throwing away tens of thousands of men. At the end of the battle, Ferro adds, the British had lost 419,654 men, the French, 194,451, and the Germans, 650,000. The brief offensive of the Somme had taken more than 1,200,000 victims. 2 million dead and wounded in only two battles in France in 1916. And who would benefit? Joffre was replaced by a general named Nivelle, who would only increase the losses in 1917 and be brought down in turn. All along the front the bodies of those who had died in vain lay rotting between the lines by the tens of thousands. The infantrymen, mowed down by machine guns, one soldier related, lie face down on the ground, drawn up as though at drill. The rain fell on them inexorably. Bullets broke their bleached bones. Rats swarmed under the faded uniforms, enormous rats, fat on human flesh, in the words of an on-the-spot witness, who continues, the body displayed a grimacing head devoid of flesh, the skull bare, the eyes eaten away. A set of false teeth had slid onto the rotted shirt, and a disgusting animal jumped out of the wide-open mouth. Was a less atrocious solution at least being approached anywhere else? What was happening at the Italian front? There, too, the Allies had wished to fight it out, but Austria had cut the ground from under them. On May 15, 1916, she captured Asiago and took 30,000 prisoners. Then, she marked time. After a conference at Chantilly, Allied plans fixed the dates for a triple offensive, first in France, and when success had been attained there, afterwards in Italy and in Russia. On the Italian front, the attack took place on August 28, 1916. They would make four tries at it. On the first try, they captured Gorizia, a quiet provincial seat where, strangely enough, in a convent are to be found the remains of the last legitimate pretender to the throne of France, the Count of Chambord. The Italians, who had a larger force than the Austrians, carried the position valiantly. But they could go no farther. A second offensive, in September 1916, failed. Then a third one in October and a fourth in November. They were stopped at Gorizia. The cost, for the Italians, 75,000 casualties, and still more for the Austrians. There, as in France, the offensives of 1916 had not even served the grave diggers, who suffered enforced unemployment thanks to the machine gun fire. That left the Russians. There, a surprise. When everyone was failing, the Russians were going to succeed. On August 16, 1916, at the worst moment of Verdun, General Brusilov, tough as a Cossack hetman and a capable leader, among so many who were sluggish and of ill repute, launched an attack through Galicia. He had prepared his attack intelligently, assembling a heavy concentration of artillery that finally had sufficient ammunition. The Austrians had stripped themselves of part of their troops and heavy artillery in order to carry out their offensive of May 15 against the Italians. If a Russian offensive fell upon them on the east, they would not be able to resist. A week after Austria had attacked toward Asiago, Brusilov charged into the Austrian lines. He was going to reconquer all of Bukovina and part of Galicia. The results were extraordinary, more than 400,000 prisoners. A hard blow for the Austrians. 1,000 of their cannon had also been captured. They had lost 25,000 square kilometers of territory, compared with the insignificant 80 square kilometers won by the French at Peronne. That would be the Russians' biggest victory, and their last as well. Brusilov's right wing, facing Prussia, had not been able to take the offensive. There it had run up against the Germans. The Russians on the right were brought to a halt, then cut to pieces. Brusilov, fortunate as he had been, had his horse shot from under him. Once again, the offensive had accomplished naught, despite its initial success. The Russian army was weary, practically falling apart. Revolution was already rumbling, as the ground rumbles and smokes before a volcano erupts. The soldiers deserted in droves. At Koval, the Germans annihilated the Russian army. Russia's great opportunity was gone. It was then, however, that the last Balkan country not yet involved entered the war. In May 1916, when Brusilov was badly mauling Austria, Romania thought her hour had come. Its government had waited for 2 years, not making a bid until it was sure of winning. Now the politicians thought they could move. But a month was lost putting the finishing touches on the declaration of war. It was already too late. Brusilov was no longer winning. He first retreated, then was swept away. To join up with him was to board not a victorious cruiser, but a sinking tub. Clemenceau's famous words are well known: among all the swine in this war, the Romanians have been the worst. They had extorted from all competitors both the possible and the impossible, concessions of territory, loans, and bribes. As in the case of the Italians, the French and British had promised 10 times as much as the Germans. But the business with the Reich had been for a long time a flourishing one. The Romanians had found it in their interest to play for time. Brusilov, swooping down like a hurricane, was definitely precipitating the downfall of the Austrians, they thought. It was all over, and it was imperative that they not wait an instant longer. The lion you think dead might just make a second Serbia out of Romania with a single swipe of its paw, the Austro-Hungarian Minister of Foreign Affairs retorted at the final moment to his Romanian colleague. The latter didn't believe him. On August 27, 1916, Romania declared war. In 3 months, she was to be totally annihilated. On November 27, 1916, the victorious German army, led by Marshal von Mackensen, entered the empty streets of Bucharest to the shrill sound of fifes.